Out of gas, maybe, or following the scent of lemons while listening to donkeys, we took a small road off a small road off a small road and drove into a town perched on the glassy waters of eastern Greece. Not in its magical islands, but on the continent, in the hard lines of permanent places where history is formed, the shores where mankind meets the sea where I was born. The town perched over crystal clear water. You could see the oval stones, emerald, umber, silver, and gold, and the anemones and shrimps and small crabs who were the water's cleaners. Sunlight reflected from the white facades of a dozen buildings, so your eyes were squinting whether you looked out to sea or back toward this civilization, which Kalanera hardly qualified to be. We stayed at a place that had a sign that said hotel, but this house was also somebody's home, another family's, with several children. The cousin of the woman who rented us our rooms took me out in his boat the first morning we woke up in Kalanera and put me to work. Hector rowed several hundred meters out to sea where the water was deep enough to fish. Hector's fish trap was a round, plastic, shallow bucket of the kind in which a grandmother might wash her feet, weighted with small stones and covered by tarp or canvas tied into place with a rubber band or elastic rope. The elastic ran under the rim of the tub and kept the canvas taut, and into the canvas was cut a small hole. Around the hole, but on the bottom side of the tarp, Hector smeared a paste of flour or moldy bread, and for this the fish flocked. All we caught was small fry, since the giant among them was rarely the size of my hand. Hector had several of these depots in the bay, and the trick was to dive down, get the tub, bring it up to the surface gently so the fish wouldn't be too spooked, and then dump its contents into the boat. On my first dives, many fish were lost, but Hector withstood my shaky incompetence with the eager hope of the employer who senses potential, because I was a good swimmer. I shot down to 10 feet, 12 feet, 15 feet, though I paid for it with ears racked by night pain. My first job became, every day, to swim for Hector, to pick up his tubs, push them up to the surface, disgorge the fish, and wait for Hector to smear his paste anew around the opening cut into the tarp, and then drop down with the tub weighted by rocks to place it among the oval rocks in such a way that it would remain level, since currents of any kind always upset the most well-balanced plans. My job description grew to include not just the swimming and diving and careful placement of the tubs, but also to the rowing of Hector's boat. It took half an hour for me to reach the tubs, and during this time Hector gabbed to me in Greek. He told me wild stories, but only he knew their outcomes or provenance. He lamented his married life or his dating life, but all of this is written with the perspective of hindsight because I had no idea what Hector was talking about. He smoked Marlboros, and the second morning we went out at dawn, he offered me one of his cigarettes. In mid-offer, he seemed to reconsider what he was doing and pulled back the cigarettes quickly and put them away in his small jacket. But the gesture was one of camaraderie, and I felt as if I had been accepted very quickly into a union of small boys who dove regularly for fish in the early purple shadows and hopping reflections of the Mediterranean sun. Every morning, Hector was on the promenade, smoking, waiting for me. He wouldn't talk until we were out of earshot of town, which meant every morning was decorated with the sound of metal tinkling to the gentle surges of the sea. The bigger boats tied up in the harbor had these metal pieces clinking to the rhythms of the water, and to this day I associate the sounds of idle boats with my first job as a 10-year-old on the shores of Greece. And to this day, the sound of a squeaking oar reminds me of the bitter smoke of a Marlboro. I don't know how many days we stayed in Kalanera, but we were a strange element in town, and Skipper knew we couldn't stay long. In summer, there was the occasional intrepid German or Italian tourist celebrating a Europe long gone, but now on the cusp of winter, Skipper knew we would attract attention. Besides, it was getting too cold for me to swim for very long. Each night we walked to the only restaurant in town. It was too cold in the evening to sit outside, so the eatery was encased in a plastic curtain which rustled and made noise and announced our arrival to anyone inside. This was always a terror for me, since my father was a circus all by himself. But the alien in tow, sneezing her snot out at unpredictable moments, but with unpredictable power, made matters much worse. This was Gege, my supposed baby sister with bad adenoids, a late delivery from another planet, 6 years old, but already a lifetime of itchy bother. I will try to make the rest of the story about Skipper and not the alien named Gege, but some important psychological facts will enrich both you, the reader, and me, the writer, if I admit a bit more to the existence of this alien. I suffered the stares of the patrons of Kalanera's only restaurant, knowing they regarded us as a strange assemblage of Americans on the lam, whether we were or whether we weren't. They sensed our flight, and I could see accusations in their eyes, even as they welcomed us to their tables covered in plastic. The residents of Kalanera had no plans to leave home, ever, so jailbirds were instantly recognized, but their dollars appreciated. We could hide here if we paid for our place, but soon jealousy or discomfort would catch up with us, as always happens in small towns, where everyone knows everyone else so well and so long. At the restaurant, each of us was given a menu, and a pantomime would ensue of ordering, as Skipper read the menu with a sort of biblical consideration. What secrets do these figures contain? This strange alphabet. We could figure out a few things, as when Skipper explained, at the head of the menu is probably appetizers, and at the end is probably dessert. With great elaboration and exaggerated articulation, his white teeth glinting in the restaurant's amber light, Skipper ordered four different dishes, and we would sit in anticipation of what would be coming, and this happened every night in the restaurant. Actually, every other night, because the lady that ran the hotel would fry us fish and French fries in her own kitchen. We were her guests. We were charged extra for the fish fry, and we might just as well have eaten there every night, and so avoided walking into the crowd at the restaurant with our sneezing alien. But Skipper pointed out that it's always good, bub, to share your business, spread around the wealth a little. Invariably, our orders at the restaurant would arrive as four dishes that were exactly the same, even if Skipper had purposely selected each dish from a different region of the menu. Perhaps on a Tuesday night, we would get four bowls of fish soup, and on Thursday night, there would be four bowls of fish soup with octopus added in or some tiny shrimps. We would look for these small differences in our soup as other people read leaves in their teacups, and I thought sometimes I recognized some of the soup's small fishes from Hector's tubs. Hector himself would come to the restaurant on the nights he knew we would be there, once he had determined our feeding patterns, and there he would be on Tuesday or Thursday evening, puffing away, giving me the thumbs up as I walked in. He cared very much for his employee and made me feel that of this group of strange visitors, my family, I was the one that worked the hardest and contributed most to Kalanera's modest economy. It was perhaps the first time that I realized that I could be different from my family and different from my peers and somehow included in a foreign society if I was willing to listen. Because it wasn't my industriousness or diving capabilities or swimming abilities that Hector needed. At any time, he could have ripped off his shirt, dove in the water, and done the job with far more vigorous efficiency than me. But what Hector needed was a sounding board. He had complaints. The price of cigarettes, certainly, and probably the price of marriage. And these complaints were a cadence to which I rowed out to sea to catch fish for the dinner tables of Kalanera. There was no golf. There was no fine wine to speak of, and Skipper was antsy. And the night finally came when Skipper told me to tell Hector the next day that we would be leaving 2 days later. I broke the news to Hector between dives. He was incredulous. You? Tomorrow? America? I couldn't explain that we were on the run and our destination was only where the car would take us, as long as Skipper wouldn't run out of gasoline, and Hector didn't want to know the details, because what mattered was that I was his American employee second and his friend first. We got back to the dock, really nothing more than the stone road that ran along the seaside edge of town, and I clambered up the stone steps, and Hector made a very elaborate show of tying up his boat to the iron ring cut into the rock. He came up onto the road and thrust out his hand and shook mine as my compatriot. He pulled some bills from his wallet. He was uncertain in their selection because he first pulled one bill out and then a second. He was uncertain in their selection because he first pulled one bill out, then a second, and then hesitated more before plunging in for a third, and these three he offered me in the midday sunshine. I looked up at Skipper on the balcony and saw his almost imperceptible shake, no, and politely I declined the money from Hector by stepping backward with my hands behind my back. Hector glanced gratefully at Skipper up on the balcony, and Skipper smiled and went inside. Hector put the money in his wallet and hugged me. Then we said goodbyes in Greek, there on the stone streets of Kalanera. When we took off in the morning, late, partly because of the sneezing alien, partly because of my scattered toys, partly because of the repacking of the car, which was always such an exercise in simultaneous efficiency and frustration, Hector was out in his boat, rowing for the first time in weeks, like a horseman newly reunited with his steed, remembering quickly the functioning of each piece of his horse. I know he wished he was still being pulled out to sea by me, so he could unleash his frustrations about the expenses of cigarettes and copulation, and probably about the loneliness of being a fisherman in Kalanera. I have been a fisherman ever since, but only when fishing is commerce and not sport. Months later, when Skipper rented a small plot of land, a spot on the edge of a stream in Scotland near the golf course at St. Andrews, I was secretly smug with each cast of Skipper's that resulted in no fighting salmon. He caught nothing, despite all the advertisements of the local sportsmen. He loved the act of fishing, but provided nothing. I would always be the lucky fool who comes back with his net loaded.
You just heard the first two chapters of Skipper, my book about my very different childhood. In the next chapter, we are kidnapped in Athens and become the pawns in a power play involving the U.S. government and the Greek nation about to declare war on its neighbor, Turkey. In chapters after that, we wander Europe in our red station wagon as the CIA and my mother continue to search for us, before we land in every crook's safe haven, the Costa del Sol, in Andalusia, in the south of Spain. In chapters in between those chapters, I will explain a little more about Skipper and how he walked out of the Florida woods to become a gentleman spy, and how most of his ethics and talents were learned in 4 years he spent in a Japanese concentration camp in China during the Great War. But all this comes later. I've got an event pressing on me now and must run. I will let you know when the rest of this book is complete, whether on paper or as audio. Thanks for listening. Talk to you soon.